What's up, people? I'm Sydney Gant. This is Break the World, and we're doing it again. So pumped to be doing this unprecedented second episode of Break the World. I'm going to take a second to perpetrate the idea that I read more than I do, and I'm going to steal a quote from a book, The Alchemist. Everything that happens once can never happen again, but everything that happens twice will definitely happen a third time. This is the twice episode, so there's definitely going to be a third. I love that quote. There's something about the simplicity of the wisdom of that quote that kind of makes me giggle a little bit. Like, if something happens twice, it's definitely going to happen three times, right? Like, if so, because something can't happen twice unless it happens once. So something about that quote just makes me laugh. It's fun. But I'm feeling good. I just recently finished a Netflix docuseries on prison called Unlocked, and I am feeling so appreciative to be a free man. I feel so good about it. And that happens to me anytime I watch any content about prison whatsoever. I suddenly feel so happy and lucky to just not be in prison. Because there was a time in my life when I actually believed that I could handle prison. When I was young, I really truly believed in my heart that if I had to go to prison for any reason, I would somehow be able to rise to the top of prison. Like, I would be able to climb the prison ladder and become king or president of prison or whatever the leadership role is. Man, there could not be anything further from the truth. I am not prison material. I am barely sleepaway camp material. When I was a kid going to sleepaway camp one time, I didn't even make it a full day. I had to call my mom to come pick me up early because I couldn't sleep because my allergies were crushing me. I was going to wake up the next day and go ziplining. I was going to wake up the next day and have the best day of my life, and I couldn't even make it one sleep. There is no way that I'm prison material. And on top of that, the only reason why I believe that I was prison material is because I was convinced that I was the master at being on punishment. And when I look back on it, I sucked at it. It stressed me out. I couldn't handle it. But what I was good at was getting off of punishment early. Like, I was good at getting my sentence reduced. But I had a single mom back then. If you have a single mom in your own punishment, one of the easiest things in the world is getting off punishment early. All you have to do is keep following your mom around all day long, stay up under her all day, and just keep asking her questions. Single moms hate questions. I almost said black moms hate questions, but I don't know what it's like to have a black mom and a dad in the house at the same time. I don't know what that's like. That wasn't my experience. But I do know for a fact that single moms hate questions, especially back then when I was doing it, because there was no internet or Google for her to be able to find the answer real quick and just give it to her to get me off her back. I was latched to that woman's back all day long, just following her around, asking her questions about how the world works. I mean, like, questions like, hey, mom, why is the sky blue? Hey, mom, what happens inside of a black hole? Hey, mom, how come me, Michael, and Nicole are all siblings, but we all have different dads? Mom, does that affect our sibling status? Does that basically make us cousins? Are we cousins? Mom, are me, my brother, and my sister cousins? That is a legitimate question, by the way. If you and your siblings have different dads, are you no more or less related than you and your cousins? I don't know. I'm not a geneticist. I don't know if I can answer that question right now. But I think that's something we ought to get to the bottom of. But that technique wouldn't work in prison. I couldn't keep asking the warden questions all day to the point that it annoyed him so much that he would let me out of prison. And on top of that, all of the rest of the inmates would think that me talking to the warden all day was just me snitching all the time, and I would just get shanked all day long. I'd be a piñata in prison. But this show, Unlocked, is wild. You gotta check it out. If you need a reminder that you're not prison material, if you need something to put you in your place, as a matter of fact, me watching this show reminded me of who I was not. Like, I'm not a person that should do anything that veers me down a particular path that might put me in prison. I need to stay in my lane. My lane is anytime there's any sort of conflict, I just be the bigger man. just be the bigger man, walk away, and not go to prison. That's my lane. Because this show, so what this show is about, there's this prison in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a detention center. And the sheriff decides that he wants to change up the way the prison system works a little bit, the way they handle prisoners while they're in the detention center. Because what they do now is something called a 23-in-1, where they're in their cells for 23 hours a day, and then they get out for 1 hour each day, and it's basically pandemonium. That's when all the fights break down. That's when all the arguments happen. That's when all the craziness that we're afraid of in prison is happening. It's that 1 hour a day. And the sheriff is pretty convinced that the reason that's happening like that is because the tensions are so high, because these people are being locked in their cells for 23 hours a day, and they're just building up tension that whole entire time. And he feels like this entire process is institutionalizing these men, so they're not going to be prepared to go out into the real world. So he basically saw some other prisons, or he heard about some other prisons in Europe that were doing different systems, and he's trying to implement these systems to see if it will psychologically have a different impact on these inmates, right? So the system that he's implementing is a 24-hour cell doors unlocked system, which, if I was in prison, that would be terrifying to me. Like, when the sheriff came down and was like, guys, we're going to implement a new system. So instead of doing 23-in-1, we're going to have the cell doors unlocked for 24 hours a day, and you guys get to roam free throughout your prison pod all day long. I would have been like, hold on, like, one person per day gets to roam free? Or is this like all of us? I have some objections. Because for me, I feel like the 23-in-1 system would be the only thing keeping me safe in prison. It would be a horrific experience if I had to basically navigate staying alive for 24 hours a day. Because if I was only out of my cell for 1 hour a day, and that's the only amount of time that I had to navigate and negotiate with everybody to kind of stay alive, I think I'd be able to do that. But just all day long, I don't know, man. I think I'd be full of holes. And every time they get in a fight, so even when they were doing 23-in-1, if they would have disputes, they would go into the cells and duke it out. And then anytime somebody lost a fight, when they were all bloody and all beat up, and they would go report their injuries to whoever they had to report their injuries to, they would just tell everybody that they fell off the top bunk. Like, that was the reason they were all fucked up. That's the reason they had two black eyes and a busted lip. They fell off the top bunk. Like, that's crazy. Like, could you imagine being in the infirmary on your first week in a prison, and you're getting these list of injuries back, and you're like, oh my God, these top bunks are maybe too slippery. What is happening? We're going to have to do something about these slippery top bunks. Or do you at least have to cross your mind, like, why can these grown men not handle bunk beds? What is wrong with these people? That's why they're in prison in the first place. Yeah. I feel like I'd just be walking into prison and people will be looking at me and be like, yep, we got another person who's going to be falling off the top bunk later on tonight. This is a person who's going to be very prone to falling off the top bunk. So yeah, man, I would be terrified in prison. I'm not afraid to admit that. Anybody that acts hard and wants to say like that they'll be able to go into prison and they'll be just be handling that shit, either you are a criminal or you're lying. That shit is terrifying. I remember one time when I visited my uncle in prison with my mom, we just went into the facility and into a visiting room. We didn't even go. We weren't even in prison, but just the building in and of itself is intimidating. Prisons are scary, man. There wasn't a single person in that prison that I feel like I could relate to, because they even took the deputy outside of the prison pod. So everybody, like I said, they had to govern themselves within this prison. And one person kind of took charge of everything and tried to keep everybody together. And he, you know, would tell people who to fight. It was wild, man. They gave them other privileges too, because they have commissary and they have commissary money. And that's what they used to buy their ramen noodles and their candies and stuff and trade. They would use all that to barter, because money doesn't mean anything in prison. So everybody's doing, it's just basically a ramen noodle currency. So one of the things that you can also use your commissary money for is to make phone calls. So they decided that another privilege amongst letting everybody out of their cells for 24 hours a day, they're also going to have free phones all the time, unlimited calling, unlimited friends and family plan, which is definitely cool. There were some fights to begin with, but then the guy that was taking control of everything came up with a phone list, and everybody complied. Everybody was like, this is a good idea. Put a phone list down, put our names on it, and we'll just go in the order. Everybody gets like 15 minutes on the phone, and that worked, which blew my mind. So there was one guy that I could relate to. He was talking on the phone to his sister, and he was trying to get his sister to bond him out of jail. And he was like, come on, it's only $1,000. And she was like, I know, but my car needs tires. And he was like, you're not working hard enough, which is a bold thing to say to somebody while you're in prison. To express to somebody you're on the phone with trying to get you out of prison and tell them they're not working hard enough is an that's ballsy. That's ballsy. But she ended up hanging the phone up on him, rightfully so. He was hard-headed. She hung up on him, and he goes back to his cell, and he just starts crying. And that was the first time I was like, yeah, that would be me. I would just be in jail crying 24 hours a day. That would be my 23-in-1. I'd be crying for 23 hours a day, and I spend 1 hour a day like trying not to cry. I'd constantly be in the infirmary suffering from dehydration. That would be my main problem. People probably wouldn't even come mess with me. It was like, I don't even want to deal with this dude. That dude is a problem. Like, I ain't messing with him. He always wet. I'm going to be soaking wet or damp at all times in prison. You're going to have to wear a hazmat suit to fight me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be so covered in my own tears and snot at all times that if you touch me, people ain't going to want to mess with you anymore. I'm going to give you, I got the cooties. I'm coming in with the cooties. Let him deal with, he's going to cry himself to death in prison. Which, by the way, you got to hydrate. That's going to be my health tip of the day. Drink water, people. You got to drink water. Our bodies are biologically conditioned to be refreshed from water. A lot of us don't drink enough water. I know you think that it's bland. I know that you want to drink something with flavor when you're having dinner, but I don't think you're supposed to. I think we're supposed to just drink water. Drink water, people. Lubricate those joints. Lubricate those muscles. But yeah, man, this show is wild. And here's the other thing. So when they're doing this 24-hour system, they have this rule. The sheriff puts this contingency on it where if he realizes that this isn't working and things are getting too out of hand, they're going to go back to 23-in-1. And there was this one guy that just keeps getting picked on. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but this one guy keeps getting picked on and everybody hates him. His shoulders are too close together. He looks like a bitch. And anytime he says anything, he gets accused of talking back, of talking too slick. And he's not even really talking slick. He's saying the same kind of stuff that everybody else is saying. But because of the way he looks, people ain't having it. Like, you know exactly what type of person I'm talking about. There's all different categories of that type of person in life. Like, sometimes the person's just too ugly. Sometimes there's a person so ugly where if he says something, you're just like, fuck you, motherfucker. You know what I'm talking about, right? So he's one of those guys. And so he starts to get a little, he's losing it. He's about to snap. So he makes a shiv and he shows it to somebody out in the common area. And so they're being watched on a camera by one person who's watching like multiple cameras. And that's the only kind of governance they have, is somebody in an outside room watching a whole bunch of TV screens. But you know that person is just playing on their phone the whole entire time. There's no way they're watching all these screens diligently. But somebody does see him show another one of the inmates his shiv, and now everybody has to do a lockdown and everybody has to get strip searched for contraband, which is another one of my fears. Anybody at all seeing my penis? That is one of the things in life that I am most fearful of. I think I have about 3 or 4 goals in any day when I'm walking around the earth. 1, don't do anything that gets me sent to prison. 2, don't let anybody see my penis. 3, don't let anything go in your butt. That's it. And then I have to like fucking eat and shelter and be loved. But those are very secondary to the first 3. Those first 3 are my main goals every single day. But they get strip searched, which is a wild thing to have a grown man have to like to lift up your penis and balls and look underneath them to see if you have contraband. That's crazy. And on top of that, what's even worse would be to find out that you didn't even have a penis that needed to be lifted up or moved to the side. That would be horrific, man. To be in prison and a guard just looks at your penis and is like, nah, this guy's good. Keep it moving. Like, you didn't even move it. It's like, come on, man, that doesn't move. That doesn't have enough length to move side to side. I'm not gonna fucking flick your penis. Man, I wonder what having a micropenis in prison, I wonder if that makes you more of a target. If people find out that you have a micropenis. Dude, I don't know if you heard about this, but recently a UFC fighter was found to have a micropenis. Multiple time champion Max Holloway was found to have a micropenis at UFC 300 recently. Because Max Holloway is, I think he fights at weight 145 or 135. I forget which weight class it is. But whatever it is, every time he weighs in naked. Because he's big for his weight class. Which, come to think of it, he's probably able to be so big for his weight class because he's not carrying any extra penile weight. It kind of reminds me of that one wrestler that didn't have any legs. And he was weighing in at the same weight of all his competitors. But he was basically a torso. From the torso up, he was bigger than everybody. And he was just dominating everybody. He was basically a Geodude from Pokemon. All right, so Max Holloway is weighing in naked. And this particular time, there was a camera that was on this. Because, you know, he weighs in naked, but they cover him up with a towel. But somebody with the camera was weighed to the side, and they got a shot of Max Holloway walking naked up to the scale. And boy, oh boy, was that an unflattering photo. It was basically pubic hair and then like a flesh-toned dot where his penis and balls would be. Very unflattering. Come on, man. That's one of the reasons I don't want people seeing my penis. It's very subjective. Dude, people seeing your penis is basically like abstract art. The viewer gets to decide what it is. It's a very subjective art form, micropenises. That's crazy to be a multiple time UFC champion and have a micropenis. That is inspiring, because I'm not going to lie to you. I was pretty convinced that every high achiever in sports probably was also packing. They were meated up. But Max Holloway disproves the rule. That could actually be a form of intimidation too. Just like flaunting your micropenis before a fight, because I am absolutely positive that nobody wants to get knocked out by a person with a micropenis. I don't even want to lose a fight. I don't even want a fight to go to a decision loss with somebody that has a micropenis. That is crazy. And he won. He won by knockout at UFC 300. In like the last second of the 25-minute fight, he won by knockout. Knocked out Justin Gaethje flat on his face. And for the rest of Justin Gaethje's life, he has to know that he was knocked out by a man with a micropenis. Like, even if they fought 100 more times and Justin Gaethje won all 100 of those fights, he will still have it in the back of his mind that one day somebody with a micropenis knocked him the fuck out. That is crazy. But again, very inspiring. I think you see those videos online every now and again where it's showing somebody that doesn't have any arms and they're at a gym and they're working out, and then they put up the tagline, "What's your excuse?" I think it's way more inspiring to have a fighter with a micropenis knocking everybody the fuck out. And it's like, what's your excuse? Yeah, because arms are not nearly as important as penis. And I don't know, because Max Holloway, he's Polynesian. And I don't know anything about Polynesian penis stereotypes. Like, I don't know if he's right on like track with Polynesian penis, or if he is, you know, an outlier as far as penises are concerned, because I think micropenises are outliers. I think there are a very small percentage of the population that have micropenises. I don't know any stereotypes about Polynesian people. I know they come from a warrior culture. I know they were like their lineage comes from warriors. And there was a time when Hawaii was just like a very brutal island chain. And it took King Kamehameha to unite all of the Hawaiian islands under violence, absolute violence. Like, they were going around from island to island, smacking each other in the head with those mallets that had this, like, a stick with that ball on the end of it. They were just caving in each other's skulls for like hundreds of years, until Kamehameha showed up with his grass skirt and a micropenis and was like, no. But yeah, man, I don't know anything about Polynesian stereotypes. I kind of wish I knew. I also saw recently some OnlyFans chick was talking to another OnlyFans chick on some OnlyFans podcast, and the one chick was asking the other chick, who she should have sex with, like which celebrity she should try to have sex with. And instantly, this chick starts launching into a tirade about all of the people she shouldn't have sex with because they have small penises. And she was just naming different rappers. I don't even know what's worse, being a fighter with a micropenis or a rapper with a micropenis. I think it's definitely a rapper. I feel like a good 45% of rap lyrics have something to do with how big their penis is. And if a rapper is not rapping about the size of their penis, it's probably a trash penis. That's going to be my new stereotype about rappers. If you're not rapping about your dick, you basically don't have one. And you got to think about the consequences, too, of having your micropenis exposed. Like, if somebody exposes your micropenis as a fighter, if somebody starts making fun of you for having a micropenis as a fighter, you can fight them. Like, that is a consequence. We can go in the ring and we can duke it out. And whoever loses, now they have a micropenis. Dude, what if that's how micropenises were spread? What if Max Holloway knocking out Justin Gaethje gave Justin Gaethje a micropenis? What if it wasn't genetic? What if it was contagious? If you get bested in life by a person with a micropenis, now you also have a micropenis. It's like that Stephen King movie Thinner, except it's called Smaller. Yeah, you know, listen, I'm just going to start being nice to everybody. I'm not trying to be cursed with anything in this world. But yeah, rappers, I mean, what are they going to do? Write aggressive poetry about you? That sounds like something that somebody with a micropenis does on their spare time anyway. That sounds like micropenis behavior. Just like, all these people making fun of my small cock. I'm going to get it to the top. Once I start going, I don't stop. It's like, all right, dude. I don't know if you can't see me writing, but I'm using a very tiny pencil. Oh, man. All right. I think we're cooking. I think we're breaking the world and having a good time here. So one of the things I want to do with this episode, I want to do the first Break the World deep dive. And today's deep dive is going to go, we're going to get into racial slurs, people. I love racial slurs. I think they're funny. As a person who is obsessed with language and words and how language and words evolve, I feel like racial slurs are some of the most unique words as far as the way that they evolve, right? Because not all racial slurs start off as racial slurs. Like, most of them start out as like racial descriptors, and eventually somebody puts a little too much stank on it and it becomes a racial slur. Like, we literally watched that happen in real time with the racial slur Karen, right? Because it started off as a descriptor for a very particular type of white woman who's nosy, who's like, let me speak to your manager, who was a tattletale, who was always, you know, making the situation about the rules or herself. And you know exactly what type of person I'm talking about when I say a Karen, right? And it would be, stop acting like a Karen, right? That's a racial descriptor. But then eventually it was, shut your Karen ass up with your Karen ass. That's a racial slur. And I don't feel like anybody talks about this, but the Karen racial slur has definitely had a negative impact on society. I don't know if you know this, but white women were single-handedly keeping customer service under wraps. They were basically quality control for customer service all across America. And now with this word Karen, white women aren't stepping up to the plate like they used to, and customer service has plummeted. Customer service has dropped harder than Justin Gaethje getting knocked out by Max Holloway's micropenis. Alleged micropenis. It could have been a trick of the camera. It could have very well been a trick of the camera. But as far as we know that right now, Max Holloway has a micropenis. But yeah, customer service sucks now. It is awful. I was just at Macy's with Ansley the other day. And we go up to this register, and Ansley almost didn't want to go up to this register because there was an old lady working behind it, and she was worried that the lady was going to be too slow. I was saying there's only one customer. She's only dealing with one customer. How long could that possibly take? So we go up there, and it took forever because this one customer didn't have what they wanted at the store, and this old lady convinced her to buy it from the catalog and like to do it at the register. So this transaction took like 5 to 7 minutes. It was a long ass transaction, right? And in the time that she was checking out this lady, a line formed behind us. So now it's a white lady in front of us, me and Ansley, and then a bunch of white ladies behind us in line, right? Like 4 or 5 white ladies behind us in line. Now, this other worker comes up to the register next to this old lady to clock in. I don't know if you ever worked in customer service or in a department store, but a lot of the times when you clock in and out, you do it at the register. You just put your little number in, poof, clock in, you're in, right? So this lady comes next to the old lady to clock in. It's a white lady. She clocks in. The old lady says to this white lady, now this old lady, she is ancient. She is one of the oldest white ladies probably in America that's still alive today. Like, this lady is so old that she remembers when the hula hoop took the world by storm. Do you know what I mean? Like, she probably played with that, you know, that ball, that stick and that round hoop that you push it along with the stick. Or she probably remembers when she was too old to play with that. It was an old lady. She's ancient. And she says to the lady that's clocking in, she goes, are you clocking in? The lady says, yes. And she says, how about you take some of these customers? And the lady said, no. And then walked away. And she had to walk away past all of us who were still in line. Nobody said anything. I was so excited to see these white ladies in their natural habitat that I turned to them. I was like, all right, it's your time to shine. Nobody said anything. Nobody did anything. We have basically stolen the destiny from these white ladies. They can't fulfill their destiny. And I don't know what type of negative impact that's going to have on society later on, but I guarantee you that pendulum's going to swing back hard, and it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly. But maybe it needs to get uglier before it gets better, because we're already at a point where Target employees are starting to act like Walmart employees. So maybe the lack of customer service needs to be tilted even further into the terrible direction before one Karen rises up and restores customer service balance to us all. Because we didn't realize it, but as a society, customer service-wise, we were all standing on the shoulders of Karens. We didn't appreciate it while we had it so good. I feel like Chick-fil-A is the last bastion of hope. So once Chick-fil-A employees start acting like Waffle House employees, that's when the chosen one will manifest. She's already out there. She just needs things to get to a tipping point for her to reach her final form. And that's when Mad Karen Fury Road is going to take place. It's just going to be some Karen in a Chick-fil-A that gets disrespected to the point where she can't even take her complaint to the manager. She has to take her complaint straight to corporate. And she can't trust anybody to get it there, so she has to go to corporate all across the country and deal with terrible customer service all along the way until she finally gets to corporate and she changes things for the better. Yeah, the chosen Karen is probably going to have to take down Amazon. Because I guarantee you, Amazon is probably who is behind the anti-Karen movement, because they're trying to destroy customer service so that Amazon is the number one distributor of goods in the world. The last Karen bender. If you're out there, the world needs you now. But racial slurs and the way they evolve, like I said, they don't always start off as racial slurs. They start off as descriptors. Or here's another example of the evolution of a racial slur. So during the Vietnam War, the U.S. soldiers would call the Vietnamese or the Viet Cong, they would call them Charlie, right? Where does that come from? Well, that comes from the fact that they were the Viet Cong. And when they would talk about them over the walkie-talkie, instead of saying Viet Cong, they would say VC, but then they would also use that military phonetic shit. So they would go VC, Victor Charlie. That's where Charlie came from. So it just basically got dwindled down to Charlie. And then it just took one overly enthusiastic jarhead to put a little too much stank on it, and then it became a racial slur. Like, somebody that was probably too enthusiastic about putting bullet holes in Charlie made it a racial slur. And that's how it evolves. That easy. So one bad apple can make something that was just a descriptor a racial slur for the rest of eternity. That will forever be a kind of messed up thing to say. Now, one of the reasons I'm excited to do this deep dive on racial slurs is because as a black man, I get to say all of the racial slurs. That is a privilege. Everybody talks about the fact that black people have no privileges in society, but I think being able to have carte blanche to say racial slurs is black privilege. And it's one of those privileges where if you don't use it, you lose it. And I refuse to lose that privilege, and I'm definitely going to take advantage of it today. So I just want to be very clear about this. I'm not saying any of these racial slurs to offend anybody. I am saying them only as an educational and entertainment purposes. And before I even get into that, I want to talk about some of the rules around racial slurs in the workplace, because that's evolved over time, right? So there's basically three categories that racial slurs have in the workplace. And this is as far as making your employer liable for you dealing with racial slurs, like you being able to sue your employer. So category number one, there are flagrant violations. And these are Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. It says that no employer may discriminate against any person with respect to terms, conditions, or privileges of employment because of such individual's race, right? So those are blatant violations. Those are flagrant violations. And then there's the gray area cases. This is the second category. So this category consists of cases in which the racial slurs and epithets were less pervasive, were not directed at a certain employee, or were not necessarily deemed to be vicious or threatening, right? And when I was doing this research about it, I found this one court case about this black guy who started working on an oil rig. And when he started working on this oil rig, it was already an environment where everybody was just constantly passing the time and making each other laugh by using racial slurs. So when he started working, people just started using racial slurs at him, but the same way they were doing it with everybody else. This guy eventually quit his job because he cited the fact that he was too psychologically challenged by being there, having to hear all those racial slurs all the time. And he sued his employer. He sued the oil rig. But the judge sided with the oil rig, saying, it's like, dude, that's the environment you walked into. And then there was, so now there's the third category, which is isolated incidents. So federal and state courts generally do not hold employers liable for situations in which there is no steady barrage of opprobrious racial comments leveled at minorities. I don't know what that word means, and I'm not looking it up. In which the use of racial terms is limited to casual conversation, or in which such slurs reflect only individual attitudes and relationships. So if there's one person bullying you with racial slurs and nobody else is hearing it, you can't sue your employer. I think that's basically what that's saying, right? So that's some of the legal stuff that I found out about racial slurs. I also looked up some psychological impacts of racial slurs, but I didn't see anything unique. It was basically saying racial slurs hurt people's feelings, right? So now we're going to get into some of these racial slurs, because again, I find them really interesting, just the way they are created and the way that they evolve. And this really started out with me feeling the other day that there aren't enough racial slurs for all the different races, right? Because I was a little jealous that white people have so many different nuanced racial slurs where you can use a different racial slur for a white person, and that would kind of denote exactly what type of white person you were talking about. And I didn't feel like black people had enough of those nuanced racial slurs. You know what I mean? If we're not a monolith, then we shouldn't all have just one racial slur. Like, we have just one. You know the granddaddy of them all. You know the racial slur that I'm talking about. It's just that one, and then you have to put a descriptor word in front of it to denote what type of black person you're talking about. Language-wise, that's inefficient. I am jealous of the fact that I can say I can say redneck, and you know exactly what type of white person I'm talking about. I say hunky, I say cracker, I say white trash, I say all the different white racial slurs. You know exactly what I'm talking about, right? So I was convinced that there weren't enough racial slurs for black people, and I did a little research, and boy, was I wrong. There are so many racial slurs for black people, right? And all people. So I found a list on Wikipedia of a bunch of racial slurs. So we're going to go over some of them. And I made them into categories. So the different categories that I have are white, black, Chinese/Asian, Aborigines, because there were just so many different racial slurs for them. There's some Middle Easterns. Those are racial slurs for people of different ethnicities that are acting white, Hispanic, mixed people, and like blank and like N-word variations. Do you know what I mean? This is like when different races have conjugations of the N-word. All right. So I'm going to start off with ethnicities that are acting white, because those were kind of funny to me. So the first racial slur I'm going to say, and again, if you don't know these racial slurs, that's the whole point of this. I didn't know a lot of these, and I was really shocked to find out how funny some of these were, and I didn't even know they existed. So the first racial slur for people that are acting white that ain't white is apple. Apple. Do you know what that is? Think about that for a second. Think about an apple. Think about how an apple is constructed. And that is basically the definition of the racial slur. That's what the racial slur is. An apple is a Native American because an apple is red on the outside and white on the inside. You see how that works? Pretty simple, right? Banana. Use the same mechanism from apple. Yellow on the outside, white on the inside. Those are for Asians that are acting white or fully assimilated into white culture. Right? Now, here's one that I didn't know. I've never heard this one before. Bounty bar. Do you know that racial slur? And I'll give you a little bit of a hint. It's from the United Kingdom. I don't know if that's going to help, but I'll give you another hint, and this might kind of give it away. It's based off of a candy. I say a candy. It's a candy bar, right? So a bounty bar is a chocolate candy bar that has coconut on the inside. So it's black on the outside, white on the inside. That's for black people in the United Kingdom to be acting white. And this one's fun. This one gets a little different, right? This is a chunky. A chunky. That is basically a FUBU Asian slur. It's for the people of that race by the people of that race. So chunky. All right, I'll tell you. A chunky is used by Asians to make fun of other Asians that they feel like are assimilated into white culture. It's basically a mix of chink and honky. Chunky. That's fun. And I think that, by the way, is a racial slur. like these are all racial slurs. I don't think any of these so far are racial descriptors that kind of evolved into racial slurs. I think all of the racial slurs for people acting white were racial slurs from the get-go. I think all racial... Dude, I'm not going to get that sentence right. You know what I was trying to say. So here's another one. Coconut. Right? Brown on the outside, white on the inside. That's used for Hispanics, Southeast Asians, Pacific Islanders, those Polynesians, and that's pretty much it. Oreo, we know Oreo. I just put it on there because I was just really cracked me up the fact that most of these acting white racial slurs are foods. And then here's a list of, these are some honorable mentions for acting white racial slurs. These are all for black people, by the way. These are Aunt Jemima, Aunt Jane, Aunt Mary, Aunt Sally. All of those are the counterpart to the racial slur Uncle Tom. I did not know that. I just thought Aunt Jemima was a fucking syrup. That's all. I had no idea that that was a racial slur for black women that be acting white. That was new to me. All right, where do we go next? All right, let's go to, let's see what I got down there for white. All right, so a lot of these racial slurs for white people aren't for just like generic white people. They're for different ethnic white people like Irish or German or things like that. So we'll start off with bog trotter. Do you know what racial slur bog trotter attaches to? Yeah, that's Irish people. That's kind of funny. Cabbage eater. Those are Germans and Russians. And then this one kind of cracked me up because this is a racial slur that started off as a joke on The Simpsons. This evolved from something that happened on The Simpsons. Cheese eating surrender monkeys. Yeah, The Simpsons invented a racial slur for French people. Cheese eating surrender monkeys. That's a fun one. We have Goomba. That's for our Italian brothers, our Italian brothers and sisters, particularly if they are behave in a way that looks like they're associated with the mob. So this was, I have a little bit of a description for this one. This was initially applied to Italian or Italian men, Italian-American men in general. It now also specifically carries connotations of stereotypical vulgar machismo and Italian mafia or Italian-American mafia involvement among ethnic Italians and Italian Americans. However, Goomba is also used among Italian Americans themselves to refer to a friend or a comrade. So look at how that evolved. That started off as a racial slur and ended up just a fun word for people to call each other. Almost like the N-word. The N-word hasn't fully evolved into a fun word that everybody can call each other, but definitely black people can say it to black people. We all know the rules. I didn't have to tell you that. You knew the rules before I even mentioned those. So, greaseball, I believe that's another, let's see. Greaseball often generally refers to Italians or a person of Italian descent. Meanwhile, though it may be used to as a shortened of greaseball to refer to Italians, greaser has been more often applied to Hispanic Americans or Mexican Americans. However, greaseball, and to a lesser extent greaser, can also refer to any person of Mediterranean, Southern Europe descent, or Hispanic descent, including Greeks, Spaniards, and the Portuguese, as well as just Latin Americans in general. So that's fun. And then we have Agubba. I don't even know. I don't know exactly how that's pronounced. It's an Aborigine racial slur for white people. Gubba. He's Gubba. And then hillbilly, honky, paleface, peckerwood, which is a racial slur for poor white people. Sheep shagger. I think that's another racial slur for the Irish. What is it? Oh, Welsh. Welsh people who are sheep herders. And then white trash. Here's a little bit of history for you. You would assume that white trash is one of those FUBU racial slurs that is like for white people by white people, but that's not where it comes from. It actually comes from the 1830s by black house slaves against white servants. That's our word. We should take it back. We should make it so that white people can't use the phrase white trash anymore. That's our word. It's also kind of a slur on themselves because they're basically slurring white people for having the same types of jobs that they have. That's like a why are you hitting yourself type of a racial slur. So those are basically all of the fun white racial slurs. And of course you'd have redneck and just none of the racial slurs for white people are that offensive because if you're a different ethnicity and you call a white person a racial slur, a lot of times it gives them street cred. It's almost like a compliment, you know? So And I think racial slurs are the harshest when they're coming from white people. Listen, I don't make the rules. That's just the way that it is. Even white trash, even if I call a white person white trash, it's not going to hurt nearly as much as if somebody from the 1% of white people calls that same white person white trash. It just is what it is. Like that is white power. White power is being able to call anybody a racial slur and have it be offensive. That's white power. So let's go to some of these. Some of these Aboriginal racial slurs were pretty interesting to me because they really had some interest in evolution. So one of the racial slurs was Abo, and that's for Aborigines, short for Aborigine, of course. So originally, this was simply an informal term for Aborigine. And was in fact used by Aboriginal people themselves, such as in the Aboriginal run newspaper, the Abo Call, until it started to be considered offensive in the 1950s. And you know why? That's because some white person put a little too much stank on it. And then all of a sudden you ain't want to hear people say it anymore. That white people are the ones that put too much stank on something to make it a racial slur. So although Abo is still considered quite offensive by many, the pejorative Boong is now more commonly used when the intent is deliberately to offend, as that word's status as an insult is unequivocal. So remember how I said that most racial slurs evolved by not being racial slurs? This one is only a racial slur. Like, this had no evolution. So a boong, let me find this word real quick, pronounced with O like the vowel in bull, so boong, boong, is related to the Australian English slang word bung, meaning dead, infected, or dysfunctional. Yeah, that was straight out of the package a racial slur. That needed no aftermarket modifications to become a racial slur. That was, bam, racial slur. So sometimes they're like that, though. And so here's another one. This is the one that kind of made me laugh. A gin jockey. What do you think a gin jockey is? Now, this is an Aboriginal racial slur. And I think the gin comes from the gin in Aborigine, right? What is a gin jockey? That is a white person having casual sex with an Aboriginal woman. So that's technically a racial slur against white people for dealing with an Aborigine. So that's interesting. That's an interesting turn of a racial slur. Let's go back. So let's get into some of these. Now we're into the Chinese / Asian racial slurs. And you might even consider it somewhat racially insensitive that I have Chinese / Asian. Maybe other Asians should have their own category. But this is kind of the way they were lumped in. So brownie, I don't know if I've ever heard that used for an Asian person. Brownie. Charlie, we already talked about Charlie, a Vietnamese racial slur. Chinaman, always a good time. And then you have your classics, your ching chong, your chink. I mean, those are pretty outdated, right? I'm pretty sure they're still offensive because when you say them, you're not saying them for any reason but to offend somebody. And there was really no history on those about how they evolved. It seems like those are ones that started out just as racial slurs because ching chong is making fun of the way that they speak their language and chink is making fun of their eyes. So that's, I think they were just pretty harsh to begin with. Chow, used by Australians, let's look this up, used as early as 1864, but it's pretty rare now. A dink, that's a Southeast Asian or a Vietnamese, did not know about that. And I included in the Asian category, dothead for Indian women. And here's one that was new to me, and I did a little research on it, and apparently it's pretty prolific. But this is about Chinese women, sideways vagina, or a sideways pussy, or a sideways cooter. Yeah, this was basically, there were rumors going around somehow that Chinese women had sideways vaginas. That's not even a racial slur. That's just messed up. Like, how does that even happen? So I did as much research on this as I could. I was having a hard time finding stuff about this, but in San Francisco, when Chinatown was first starting, a lot of the Chinese women who would come over to America, they were having a hard time getting jobs outside of Chinatown or maybe inside of Chinatown. And a lot of them were turned into brothels or sex work, right? Then there was a time where they stopped Chinese women from being able to come to America because they were saying they're just coming in and becoming sex workers and we're having too many of that. Once that happened, there was a disproportionate amount of Chinese men to Chinese women in the United States, in San Francisco. So there wasn't a lot of interaction with Chinese women. And somehow that rumor was able to persist because not enough people were seeing Chinese women vaginas. From what I found, I think the reason why it started, right, it was basically a commentary on the fact that they were mostly prostitutes. And it was to say that Chinese women were so slutty that even when they closed their legs, their vagina was still open. So if their vagina was, instead of vertical, you know, you have a vertical normal vagina, you close your legs, that vagina is sealed shut. But if you have a sideways vagina, when you close your legs, it opens, I guess is what that kind of came from. It was kind of like, you know those things back in the day when you would make them out of paper and you would put different numbers inside of them and you would like pick a number and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right, and then you say pick another number, you do that 1, 2, and then you open it up and it has like a little note written on it. I think that's what they're basically saying that Chinese vaginas were looking like. They're like, pick a number, one of those types of vaginas. So that basically ends our Chinese stereotypes. And then, so Middle Eastern, there weren't a lot. Just the typical Alibaba, camel jockey. I mean, there were more, but they were really hard for me to pronounce. So I didn't even know if they were funny or not. So I didn't use the ones that I couldn't pronounce. Hispanics, we already went through some of those, but beaner, that's kind of a funny one to me. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory with the whole rice and bean situation. I'm pretty sure that's where that came from. Let me see. There is some history there. The term originates from the use of frijoles, pintos, and other beans that can be generally found in Mexican food. A lot of these racial slurs come from food. So now we're going to, mixed people. I only had one funny one for that, for mixed people. And in Russia, they were using this racial slur for mixed people. Again, it was people that were mixed with anything brown. They were calling them festival children. Festival children. And the reason was, is it was believed that the first noticeable appearance of black and or mixed ancestry children appeared after the Sixth World Festival of Youth and Students of 1957. The term was often used ironically and sometimes in mildly derogatory fashion. So again, that started off as something that was just a descriptor for the boom of mixed kids, and then somebody put a little too much stank on it, and all of a sudden it's a racial slur. So the term is currently not used today, but I wouldn't be offended if you called my children festival children. I do have children with a white lady. I would not be offended if you called my children festival children. All right, and so let's see. I'm going to save black for last because, I mean, that was the whole entire reason I got into this research in the first place. But the blank N-words, right? So these are conjugations of the word nigger for use as a racial slur for ethnicities outside of black. So you can almost say that these are acting black racial slurs. Prairie nigger. That was new to me. I've never heard that phrase before, but that is for a Native American that be acting a little black. Prairie nigger. Not nearly as cute as apple. Apple is way more palatable than prairie nigger to be heard. Sand nigger, that's for Arab folk. And not even for Arab folk that are acting black. That's just for Arab folk. Wigger, we know that. And then now we can get into some of these black racial slurs, right? These are interesting. Because the first one that I'm going to start with isn't necessarily a racial slur, but it's a description of work, right? It's a, I'll actually read the description for you first. So the racial slur that I'm going to tell you is used for shoddy, second-rate, or unconventional makeshift workmanship. Indirectly refers to black American people as worse or lower valued than white American people when associating anything bad with them. So this phrase, for shoddy, second-rate, or unconventional makeshift workmanship, is nigger rigging. Nigger rigging. And I'm pretty sure if you work in the trades, you've heard this word used very casually before. I heard it. I've heard somebody say the word nigger rigging and they didn't even like catch themselves and look up and be like, oh shit, my bad. It's just a casual word that is used by people in the trades. So that's pretty funny. And I don't even think that's considered necessarily a racial slur. It for sure is. But I don't think that people that use it realize how much of a racial slur it actually is. So this was pretty interesting to me. Bimbos. Did not know that. The word bimbo was originally a racial slur for black people. The origin of this term is disputed, however, but experts suggest that it either derives from the Central African town of Bimbo or from the former state of Bimbia, which was annexed by the German colony of Cameroon. So, bimbo is a racial slur used by Germans for black people. And then there's getting into some of these racial slurs that are kind of like a compliment. Black buck, black brown brute. These are basically racial slurs that originated from the post-Reconstruction United States. It was used to describe black men who absolutely refused to bend to the law of white authority and were seen as irredeemably violent, rude, or lecherous. Now, not bending the knee to white people, that's kind of honorable, especially at that time. So black buck is almost like an honor, a status symbol. Like if you're not a black buck, you or an Uncle Tom. Like, which end of the spectrum would you rather be on? Would you rather please the white people or please the black people? That's kind of the conundrum that you were facing back then. Blue gum. That's an interesting racial slur, right? This is a racial slur for black people. And It's an African-American that's perceived as being lazy and unwilling to work. And I did a little research on this because I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what does like blue gum come from? So I looked up blue gum symptoms. So there are diseases. There are diseases that you can have where one of the symptoms is having a blue gums. I think it was called cystis. I forget what it was. I didn't write it down. But one of the other side effects of that is lethargy. It makes people tired. So these people had a disease. These blue gum black people that are being racial slurred were suffering from a condition. So that's an interesting evolution. Boot lip. This is a new racial slur, boot lip. And I don't know if this racial slur was talking about the fact that brown people or black people had brown leathery lips, or if their lips kind of jutted out like the foot part of a boot. You know what I mean? Like those old timey boots. And that's what black people's lips look like. I don't know. But Buckwheat is a name of a black character that appeared in the Our Gang Little Rascals short films. Today it's used to refer to the curly hair of a black person. So that ended up evolving into a racial slur because people put a little too much stank on it. I'm sure at one time it was just people making fun of each other. Oh, you look like buckwheat. You know, and then white people got a hold of it, of course, and then it became a racial slur. Coon. Now, I was very interested in learning about this particular racial slur because you hear it a lot and you know what a coon is. It's basically an Uncle Tom. It's basically used to denote that a black person is assimilated into white culture or behaving in a way that they're trying to appease the white man, right? But this slur was popularized by coon songs played at minstrel shows. Originally associated in the 1830s with the U.S. Whig Party, who used a raccoon as their emblem. The Whigs were more tolerant towards blacks than other main parties. After the party folded, the term coon evolved from political slang into a racial slur. Within African-American communities, the word has been used to refer to a black person who was allegedly a sellout. So this just started as people who were just endeared to a particular political party, and then it evolved into a racial slur. Did not know that. That was definitely something that I learned. So crow, of course, that's just a black animal. Darky. This has some history to it. Did they have a little definition up for it? Darky. So according to lexicographer Richard A. Spears, the word darky used to be considered mild and polite before it took on a derogatory and provocative meaning. Now look, even as a person who's advocating for the idea that a lot of racial slurs started out as a word that wasn't a racial slur and evolved into a racial slur because people started to put a little too much stank on it, there is no way in hell that darky was ever mild and polite. That is fucked up. I don't believe that. I think that was just clueless white people. Like, look, it doesn't even bother them. Hey, darky, see that? Nothing. There's no way that was ever a polite thing to call a black person. It's just like anything E. Anything where you put E on the end of it is always kind of a teasing thing. So, fuzzy wuzzy. Fuzzy wuzzy. This was a term used for the Hadendoan people of Sudan. The term used to refer to the Hadendoa warriors in the 19th century in reference to their elaborate hairstyles. That's pretty interesting. These Sudanese people would have these crazy hairstyles, and then I forget what it was, the Germans or the British, I think it was the British, would call them fuzzy wuzzies. Now, here's a little caveat. This term apparently is not applicable in Australia for those particular people, because in Australia, the Fuzzy Wuzzy Angels was the name given by Australian soldiers to Papua New Guinea war carriers who, during World War II, were recruited or forced into service to bring supplies up to the front and carry injured Australian troops down the Kokoda Trail. But even though it's not for the Sudanese, even in Australia, it's still a racial slur. All right? And this is what we're going to end on. This is pretty interesting. Gollywog. Or I'll tell you what, 8-ball, that was another racial slur. I thought that was pretty interesting. That's just for black people. But gollywog. Have you ever heard that racial slur? Gollywog, because it's supposed to be used by people of the United States, Australia, and New Zealand. So a gollywog is an expression which originally was a children's literature character and type of black doll, but which eventually came to be used as a jibe against people with dark skin. So the doll, the gollywog doll, picture a Raggedy Ann doll in blackface, but with black curly hair, like a short black curly afro. And that was a gollywog. And this also says that a gollywog was one of the least known of the anti-black caricatures, right? So, the anti-black caricatures, these were pretty interesting. Jim Crow, that was an anti-black caricature. Sambo, gollywog, pickaninny, mammy, mandingo. Now, that's an interesting one, right? Because that's another one of those racial slurs that is also kind of a compliment. So the mandingo is a stereotype of a sexually insatiable black man with a large penis, invented by white slave owners to advance the idea that black people were not civilized, but rather animalistic. Dude, how small, on average, do your penises have to be where you are looking at somebody with a large penis and you're like, that is an uncivilized human right there. Look at that penis. He is a danger to society. That is uncivilized. I, for one, will not stand for that. But it's a compliment. Mandingo, the supposedly inherent physical strength, agility, and breeding abilities of black men were lauded by white enslavers and auctioneers in order to promote the slaves they sold. Since then, the Mandingo stereotype has been used to socially and legally justify spinning instances of interracial affairs between black men and white women into tales of uncontrollable and largely one-sided lust. So basically, they were accusing black men of having dicks that were so big they were turning white women into sluts. They were just like magnets for white women vagina, just being drawn to these giant Mandingo cocks. I don't know. I don't think I would have. Listen, again, I said early on that I don't want anybody to ever see my penis. But if people want to spread around the rumor that I have a Mandingo in my pants, I'm perfectly fine with that. Nobody will ever see it to prove otherwise. I keep my penis under wraps. My penis is like Fort Knox. Nobody gets inside unless they have the proper clearance. All right, this stereotype has also sometimes been conflated with the black brute or black buck stereotype, painting the picture of an untamable black man with voracious and violent urges. Right? Mandingo. I think that comes from the Mandinka people of West Africa, presently populated Mali, Guinea, and Gambia. So there's a whole region of Africa where they just have giant. I think people just assume that about Africa in general. Like, that's where giant dicks come from. I would be shocked to find out that anybody that is in Africa of African descent has a micropenis. That would blow my mind, and it would also be inspiring. But I heard one time from Neil deGrasse Tyson that Africa is one of the most biodiverse places on the planet. Like, everything happens in Africa. So Africa has the largest penises, and therefore Africa has to also have the smallest penises. They have the most micro of micro penises because it's the most biodiverse place on the planet. Take that and do that, what you will. But Max Holloway probably thinks he has the largest micro penis in the world just because of what he's achieved with a micro penis. Or maybe the smallest. Maybe when you have a micro penis, you want to go small. Like, you want to have the smallest micropenis. But sorry, Max Holloway, you're Polynesian, and the most biodiverse place on Earth is Africa. So we're going to close. So Sapphire, I didn't know about this. So this is this stereotype dates back to the successful 1928 to 1960 radio show Amos and Andy, which was written and voiced by white actors. The black female character Sapphire Stevens was the wife of George Kingfish Stevens, a black man depicted as lazy and ignorant, a blue gum. These traits were often a trigger for Sapphire's extreme rage and violence. Sapphire was positioned as overly confrontational and emasculating of her husband, and the show's popularity turned her character into a stock caricature and stereotype. So the stereotype has also developed into the trope of the angry black woman, overall portraying black American women as rude, loud, malicious, stubborn, and overbearing in all situations, not only in their relationships. So that's how Sapphire evolved. That came from a radio show. But again, I think it kind of always started out as having a negative connotation. And then we have Jezebel, the Tragic Mulatta, and Uncle Tom. In the Tragic Mulatta, if you've ever heard that particular racial slur, because that was also new to me, that's basically a light-skinned woman that's so light that she can pass as white, and she desperately wants to marry a white man. She's desperately trying to have a white husband to evolve herself out of the black community somehow. And I don't know if she's tragic because she can't do it, but nonetheless, that is the stereotype. The Tragic Mulatta is the racial slur. And I think that concludes our first ever Break the World deep dive. I hope you learned something. I hope you... I just went through a list of racial slurs. It was like, I hope you learned something. Yeah, but some of those racial slurs were new to me. Some of the idea behind some of those racial slurs were also new to me. And just to show that things evolve, things change over time. So maybe over time, things can evolve into a better light. So this was basically something to bring us all together. We need one, we do need one racial slur. One racial slur to unite us all, to bring all the people together as one. And then we just put descriptors in front of that to denote what type of person we're talking about. But man, that's it. Listen, if you've made it this far, you definitely like what you've been hearing. So do all the things you do to make podcasts grow. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this with as many people as you think needs to hear what we're doing on Break the World. That was the second episode of Break the World. I hope you enjoyed the deep dive into racial slurs. I had a little bit of fun with it. I hope you had just as much, if not more, fun with it. And I hope you tune in for the next episode of Break the World. Thank you so much, guys. I'm out.